Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, hour number two on this Monday. What's happening? Tiki and Tierney Show. Tiki Barber, Brandon Tierney, coming here from our Rocket Mortgage studio. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. Come on in. Hope everybody's doing well. Get us on Twitter. You want to jump in, first hour conversation, Steelers, Titans, what happened, change of heart for Bruce Arians down in Tampa as AB joins the ranks. Hit us up at Tiki and Tierney, 1-855-212-4227. This hour, baseball. Next segment, all baseball. Inbounds, out of bounds this hour as well. You know, college football, there's a lot going. Not that you lead with this, but I think it's fairly interesting, probably more regional because of where you and I live, but just as a mention before we get lost in the big stuff, nice to see Schiano get a win in his Rutgers debut, T.
Yeah, I agree.
That was good.
Look, Greg Schiano in this Rutgers program at one time was top of the heap, so to speak, in the Northeast area. They were ranked in the top 10, and it felt like, man, Rutgers, they're gonna do something with themselves. And they joined the Big Ten, and they disappeared into oblivion. In fact, until yesterday, they had lost 21 straight Big Ten games. 21. I mean, that's like 3 years of losing, not winning a conference game. I mean, it had to be frustrating. Obviously, they cleaned house over there, and Greg Schiano comes back after stints in Tampa as a head coach, and then assistants with the Patriots and some other places around, college and pro. And now he's here, and they start his new tenure with a big win over Michigan State. Now, Michigan State might just suck, but it doesn't even matter. Yeah. It doesn't even matter.
Rutgers, they do.
Rutgers won a Big Ten game, and that's a big accomplishment for a program that has been the laughingstock of the conference for a few years now.
Been a doormat.
Yep.
They were how they were before they actually had that renaissance with Schiano. Like, there was like a 20-year period, roughly, between Temple and Rutgers in the Northeast. It was just, wow. So good for Schiano, and we'll see, what that leads to. Not a ton this year, I don't think, but maybe get some energy back. Plenty of energy for Michigan. Looks like Harbaugh might have his quarterback. Wisconsin played great, but we got a problem there now. And listen, can you explain to me, this is unfair. This is unfair to the Big Ten.
Yeah.
So Wisconsin's quarterback, who barely missed an attempt, I mean, he was almost flawless. He was perfect. The positive COVID test that came back for him, he is now forced to sit out for 21 days.
Yeah. Well, I think they're still waiting on the nasal swab test. Now, obviously, we're talking about Graham Mertz, who was the starting quarterback for the Wisconsin Badgers. They had a huge win over the Fighting Illini, who didn't really fight, but Illinois.
Hanging on.
He threw for 248 yards and 5 touchdowns, BT. He missed one pass. He was 20 of 21, which I think is a Big Ten record for completion percentage, 95 or something percent like that. And it actually makes Wisconsin feel like a team that could be viable in the Big Ten with this redshirt freshman, Graham Mertz. The game that he had against Illinois. Again, Illinois is not good, just like Michigan State is not good, but still, it's your first game. You haven't done anything all offseason. You're halfway through what should be your regular season, and you're getting your first game in, and you go out and you perform like that. It's fantastic. But he comes back with a positive test, and this is the rapid test. They're testing every day, so it's the rapid test that came back positive. As a side note, Wisconsin has had a bad history, an unfortunate history this offseason or this year with false positives. So the hope is that after the nasal swab, that's the one that goes up into your brain, basically, that it will come back negative. If not, per Big Ten COVID protocols, he will miss 21 days. And that's
utterly ridiculous. That is utterly ridiculous and utterly unfair to every team of the Big Ten.
That's right.
You shouldn't have even come back and played the season.
That's
if you're going to try.
Because it's going to happen.
Of course it's going to happen. And it could happen to, if it happens to Ohio State, it could take away a chance for a championship.
That's
21
right.
days is ridiculous. That's one of the dumbest things I've heard.
That is
utterly ridiculous and really tough to comprehend. 21 days?
Doesn't make
for
sense.
For a 20-year-old kid?
Yeah.
And that's a joke.
No, I think he's probably 19. Well, he's young.
You know
yeah.
That's a joke.
And here's the thing. They're number 9. Wisconsin is ranked number 9. So they are good. They're supposed to be good this year. But if he misses, if he's sick and he can't play, he's going to miss games against Nebraska, Purdue.
Which they could probably win. They could probably win.
And Michigan.
Right, but Michigan's the third one.
They're probably not going to win without their quarterback. Now, they have another young quarterback, a redshirt sophomore, who may come in and be just as, serviceable. But he's not going to be, at least not at the start that Graham Mertz had. And, I agree with you. I know that the Big Ten had a lot of fear about this myocarditis. That's the condition that affects your heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually for bigger players, usually for the offensive linemen who are unnaturally big anyways, to have COVID, respiratory or breathing or vascular issues because of the coronavirus. It creates this irregular heartbeat that could last who knows how long. And so
knows that answer.
Exactly.
Yet.
Nobody.
It could be a lifetime.
And we won't know for 30 years, BT. You know what I mean?
So, roughly.
But they're basing their decisions on protecting their kids against that. I get it. But 21 days
That's
is
a
long, long. It's almost overcautious.
Yeah.
And we've seen the ACC, who's had a bunch of positives throughout all of their schools, mitigate this without having to do this. We've seen the SEC do this, and I'm sure the Big 12 as well. It feels like they're walking too cautious of a line that's going to compromise the season. Now they're going to say, we don't care about the season. We care about the health of the kids. But
you do care about the season because you made sure to come back and have a season.
That's
which
exactly
I
right.
respect. But
that's exactly right.
I mean, you're asking the Big Ten, from the best team to the worst team, you're asking the Big Ten to vie for a national championship with one hand tied behind their back.
Yeah.
Nick Saban, thankfully, he recovered quickly. Great. Okay. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, it was a false positive.
No, I know. But yeah. but think about the other circumstances around the league. There's Mike Norvell. How much time did Coach Norvell miss?
10 days. He missed 10 days.
Exactly. 21 days?
Yeah.
I mean, and I've always erred on the side of conservatism, you will, with COVID.
Be safe.
Yes, yeah. Be smart. Be sensible. Always wear the mask. Of course. 21 days.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, if I'm a player, well, I guess you I don't know if you signed anything, but you by playing you agreed to that rule, that Big Ten rule that they implemented in 21 days. But I would contest that. I would fight that vigorously. I'm not sitting out 21 days.
Yeah.
Why am I sitting out 21 days and somebody else from another conference is sitting out 10 days or 7 days?
I agree.
Why would I do that?
Yeah, I think this will get looked at, I'm sure, by the Big Ten, by their medical professionals, and especially if he's asymptomatic. And I think most of these positives in college have been asymptomatic. I don't know the percentage, and I'm not giving an empirical number here, but I would guess that most of them are asymptomatic cases where someone has caught the coronavirus, they weren't heavily exposed, they haven't had any respiratory issues, it's just the fear of spreading it that's keeping them out, and so they quarantine as they should for 8 to 10 days, 14 if need be, and they continually test, and ultimately they get cleared and they come back and everything keeps going along. 21 days is too long as a baseline. If it's okay if he has to be 21 days because he doesn't kick the virus, but as a baseline, as a starting point, that seems excessive.
It's ridiculous. Coach Franklin might want to go and run and hide for 21 days after how he mismanaged what happened at the end of the Indiana game.
Yeah.
All right, so bye-bye to Penn State.
Yeah.
not that based on defections and injuries, not that we really thought that they would do much. We said this the other day. But they did come into the season with a single number at least their, the start of their season, with a single number next to their name. What were they, nine, I think?
Yeah, yeah, eight, I think they were eight. I think they were eight, yeah. Eight or nine. Because Wisconsin was nine.
That's right, they were eight, and they go into Indiana, a team that, that never beats top 10 teams. I think the last time the Hoosiers beat a top team was back in 1987. I think the last time they beat a top five team was 1978. You know, Hoosier basketball, generally pretty good. Hoosier football, generally an afterthought. So I'm really happy for Indiana, but the problem is, I really am. I love when a team that's not supposed to win overcomes all these layers of history and they're able to slay it. I think it's great for the kids and it just energizes the campus. I have great affinity for that because that really embodies what college sports all about, like the improbable, the unexpected. But what it does do is, you know, it just further relegates the Big Ten, especially if Wisconsin's playing with a backup quarterback against Michigan.
Yeah.
You know, Penn State, see ya. Wisconsin's not beating Michigan without this kid who played Saturday. Now you have to pin your hopes on the Buckeyes not stumbling once or getting COVID infections.
Yeah.
And you got to hope from what you that is what you saw from Michigan's a little real.
Yeah, no, that's the
which
big
picture.
Yeah,
be,
that's
the
big picture conversation about the college football playoff. It, with the way that this is set up, because of the Graham Mertz issue and now Penn State, you better hope that Ohio State just rolls through, even if Justin Fields or somebody goes down because of COVID or whatever it may be. The Big Ten could be in trouble. But the specific conversation about James Franklin is an interesting one, BT, because some people hate him, some people love him, some people are just kind of indifferent in the middle with him. It was clear that his team wasn't ready to play. Like, I like Michael Penix. You know, I did that game, an Indiana game, a couple of years ago. I think it was Indiana, Ohio State. And this kid, Michael Penix.
It was at Indiana, right?
It was at Indiana.
I remember when he went there.
And Michael Penix got hurt in this game. But I remember watching him like, man, this kid's got some skill, man. He's not a great thrower, but he doesn't have to be. He's just got to be a little bit of a playmaker. And, you know, they could be dangerous. Now, they need much more talent at Indiana. And, you know, maybe eventually that happens.
No,
but I agree. But
no, because the state doesn't have good high school
This
football.
Was all about Penn State. This game, this first game of Penn State season was all about Penn State. Indiana was just kind of like, they might be a little thorn, a gnat in your side, but, you know, a thorn in your side, a little gnat that's bothering you on the beach. But you should be able to push through them. James Franklin didn't have his team ready. Now, obviously, they went down and scored on their first drive, BT, but everybody can do that. Florida State did that against Miami. Then they did bupkis for the rest of the game. They weren't prepared for the non-scripted section. Here's what happened after that first drive, BT.
Go ahead.
Three plays and a punt. Then an interception. Five plays and a punt. Then another interception, and then a fumble, and then halftime. So before you know it, this is Penn State, who's supposed to be one of the top 10 teams in the country, not ready to play against Indiana. And again, yes, I'll give credit to Michael Penix Jr. because he's a kid, he's a good kid, and I think he's a good player on a bad team. But they're down 17-7 at halftime and have to work their way back. Now they finally work their way back and they get into a position where they're going to win this football game, BT. They're up 21-20. Game, you know, game is over. Yep. Game's over.
There's a minute and 47 seconds to go when Indiana turned the ball over on downs.
Yes.
And the Hoosiers have one timeout left.
And they're on the 14-yard line.
Yeah.
14-yard line going in. 14-yard line going in. All you got to do is run three plays and take a knee and then kick a field goal, game is over. Or whatever. Don't do anything. You don't have to kick a field goal. Instead, they hand it off to Devin Ford, who was the precursor to Todd Gurley. Indiana literally just backed away from him. And he ran into the end zone and scored a touchdown, which stopped the clock, gave Indiana the ball back. Michael Penix runs him down the field, scores a touchdown, then scores a two-point conversion, overtime.
Really
no, 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 no. This isn't regulation. Scores a two-point conversion to even the game at 28-28. And then in overtime, Penn State takes care of business. They go score, kick the extra point. You got to do three overtimes before you have to go for two. Indiana said, screw it. We're going for two on the front of our first touchdown. And Michael Penix dives, just lays out. I think the ball hit the out of bounds before it hit the pylon. But it was not conclusive enough evidence. And Indiana upsets James Franklin and the Penn State Nittany Lions and basically eliminates their chances for the college football playoff, maybe even the Big Ten championship because they're only playing eight games this year. And you can't help but look at James Franklin and say, first of all, you mismanaged it from the start. And then you mismanaged it at the end of the game when it was win time. And so I don't know how you put this on anybody. I mean, yes, obviously it's on the kids and the players, but you got to prepare your players.
And no, that goes without saying.
They weren't prepared. And this is on the head coach.
100%. I don't think I've ever seen. I know we're going to get into baseball in the next segment. I feel like in the last 3 days, I have seen more inconclusive replays.
Yeah.
Like even the steal of home. I don't know. Was Margot really definitely? I don't know.
No, he was out. He got his hand.
But the three-dimensional aspect of touching the plate, you can't. Yeah. I think they got him.
Yeah, he got him. I didn't review him. You know, I could tell. You just tell. He was
there
out.
There was a play at second, though, with Seager, where and there was a play at third base as well, where it slid
past
the bag.
It was also Margot. It was Margot when he went to third. And then
he
stole home.
Past the bag of third and Turner put it back on him. You couldn't tell. Did he get him? Was his hand, because his hand was on the other side of the bag, but he tagged him a little bit. The replay was not of much assistance this week, and I have news for you.
But here's what I'm actually enjoying about the replay, because you're seeing this in football, you're seeing it in baseball as well. They're using replay for what it was intended to do. They're not using replay to decide games or adjudicate in real time. Mm-hmm. They're using replay to find egregious errors.
Correct.
And so whatever gets called, whatever the naked eye calls. Yep. So when Michael Penix Jr. dives for the pylon in the 2-point conversion in overtime, and they call it a touchdown because the pylon goes over, and you can't really tell, did the butt of the ball hit the ground first, or did it hit the tip of the ball, hit the pylon first? You can't really tell. Let's just leave it as it is.
And that's the right play.
That's exactly what happened with Margot, sliding into third base, where Justin, he lifted his body off. I mean, by the letter of the law, he's out because nothing is touching the bag, and Justin Turner has the tag on him. But that's not the spirit of what replay is for. So,
although, Teague, not to nitpick, I thought on the play at third, which I thought was different than the play at second and home, you really couldn't tell if Margot's right hand, because the camera angle was
the other one. The other one shows it off. The other one shows it, though. The other one shows when his hand is where it is. It's off.
I wasn't sold.
I'm glad they didn't overturn it, because it set up the drama of him trying to steal home.
Yeah, which we'll get to coming up. I mean, the bottom line is this. When you look at great to have the Big Ten back. Nice to see Michigan cranking up some offense and seemingly having a quarterback for Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
Nice to see Wisconsin doing what they did. Hopefully this COVID situation resolves itself favorably for the Badgers. But you can't frame this as anything other, aside from that shoot that you actually got back on the field, which is an inherent positive.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot frame this as a full positive when the number 8 team of the country loses a game they're supposed to win 10 out of 10 times.
Yep, and the number 9 team loses their quarterback maybe for 21 days. The only thing you can clap your hands about is Michigan is real with Joe Milton at quarterback, and Ohio State looks dominant.
Mm-hmm. Although they did rub it in a little bit at the end there, the Buckeyes,
Ryan Day apologized. It was a freshman quarterback. He was just trying to, like, I don't know.
Get him some reps.
Yeah, he's trying to. I gotta get my touch.
Hey, listen, nothing's gonna keep me away from getting on that stat sheet. I don't care what time I get in the game.
Exactly.
I'm doing what I gotta do, man. I gotta go. I gotta walk around campus at some point. You know,
Scott Frost, stop him. He's a freshman. Stop him.
That's true. You don't like it, stop it. Coming up next here. All right, Kershaw wasn't as good as he was in game one, but effective. That narrative has changed, even though Dave Roberts continues to take the ball out of his hand early. We'll get to that. Do you give the Rays a puncher's chance the rest of the way? Can they salvage it and force a game 7? And this may have been the wildest sequence of games I've ever seen in the World Series. I mean, Saturday night was ridiculous. We'll talk about what was really a great weekend for a great sport. Talking World Series next. Tiki and Tierney rolls on CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free lines, 1-855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. That is 855-212-4CBS. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. Let's get to this little beautiful thing we call baseball. Oh, my God. Listen, I know that it's the easiest thing to do when you do what you and I do with a microphone, the lowest hanging fruit in any conversation is to reach for something that is fueled by emotion, and you can rant and rave a little bit, right? And you can have a good take. But if you're really, truly ranting and raving, or we're doing it last night, even after Dustin May rewarded Dave Roberts' faith, I think you're hitting the wrong buttons. Listen, I wish this was the 80s and 90s, you know, where Jack Morris, you know, goes 11 innings. Of course you wish that, but those days are gone. Yes, I wish Kershaw had a little more wiggle room last night, much like he did in game one, to further, you know, dispel this narrative that's been chasing him for years now, which I believe he fully has. But that's not the modern game. So if you're going to rip Dave Roberts for pulling him, I understand the sentiment, but yeah. Once the result works out, which it so clearly did with Dustin May, you gotta abandon ship.
Yeah, I don't know. They were booing there. Now, I don't know the fan makeup.
90-10 Dodgers.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I assumed.
The Rays fans don't go to the games in Tampa.
This is a good point.
They go to the games in Texas.
True, that's a good point. So, but it's closer. That's why I was just wondering.
it's kind of split in the middle if you really think about it.
I'm trying to think.
Mike, do me a favor. Mike, do a quick check. Exact mileage from L.A. to Fort Worth area, and exact mileage from Tampa, greater Tampa area.
It just feels
to
like
Fort
it's
Worth.
Closer, even though it might not actually be. But yeah, I think you're right.
I'm going to say Tampa's slightly closer.
Clearly 90-10, because as soon as Clayton Kershaw got pulled in the middle of the sixth inning, two outs in the bottom of the sixth inning, it was like, boo, they're booing Dave Roberts. But then they, you know, quickly turned to applauding the effort of Clayton Kershaw, who had only given up two runs to that point, and they had the lead in the game. So he was going to get the win as long as Dustin May – no, he was going to get the win or no decision. And so Dustin May did his job, you know, struck out the side, and then obviously they cleaned up and closed it out for the win. But this is exactly what I would have espoused for the skip of the L.A. Dodgers, Dave Roberts. You know, Clayton Kershaw is giving it his all, and he did. He pitched, what, 85 or 86 or something like that?
I think it was 87. First game was 78. I thought last was 80, whatever it was.
Yeah, it was like 80. Well, I know we went into the sixth inning, and he only had 85, and he only threw two pitches. Mm-hmm. Basically, you know, ground out and then a pop fly. I remember saying this, you know, before game one. Dave Roberts needs to have his pulse on Clayton Kershaw. He needs to know when he gets to that point where they're dialed in a little bit, they're making contact, and before they start launching on him and pull him. And I thought it was the perfect time to pull Clayton Kershaw because it worked, and mainly because he had faith in his bullpen to take care of business, which they ultimately did. So I don't understand the flack that Dave Roberts is giving, and I don't think Clayton Kershaw is one to stand up and say he should have let me go.
Well, he's not.
Eight.
I mean,
you
listen,
know what I mean? I think it was just right.
Listen to what Kershaw said, but it's the complete opposite. I mean, he's team player all the way. Here's Kershaw post game on getting the hook when he did. Teek, here's why the emotional meter is still a little bit wound up in support of Kershaw and anti-Dave Roberts, because Kershaw, you know, the true fans of the sport, even those who aren't true fans, I mean, just look at the numbers. Multiple Cy Youngs, could have five. He's got three, won an MVP. I mean, the guy's, he's won 70% of his games. He's ridiculous, Kershaw. Modern Koufax, as we know. Actually, probably better outside of World Series appearances, because Kershaw really had a five-year window of greatness, and Clayton's had, well, he's pitched 13 years. He's had about 10 and a half years of lights out, top flight, you know, first ballot Hall of Fame stuff. But I think because he's such a good guy, and because he struggled at such inopportune times, and he's such an icon of the game, that people want to see him slay that narrative demonstrably.
Yeah.
And when you go 5 2/3, you know, it's not demonstrable. It's just not. Now, what I'll say is, watching game one versus last night, game one, Clayton Kershaw had A-plus stuff.
Yes.
A-plus. Last night, I think he had B-minus, and I thought he began to gravitate toward B stuff as the game went on. You remember the first strike, the strikeout of Joey Wendell, it was a curveball that was right around letter high. I don't know if you remember that one, Teague. letter high.
Yeah, it was high.
It was high. It was even high. Smoltz's like, I don't know if that's in the Fox.
He's like, our box says it.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said. That was a curveball with no bite, which means Clayton's got no real feel on the baseball at that point.
So which is why Wendell laid off of it, because it was a ball and it wasn't fooling him.
I thought it was a ball, for sure. Now, let me take it to the pivotal point of the game. And as much as, you know, with Muncy's bomb of 100-mile-per-hour cheese and the pose, which was sick.
That was the plan. We talked about it before the inning. And even though it was just two pitches, which made it seem super fast.
It's bottom of the fourth inning, all right? And for a team that struggles with less than home runs, as you documented, roughly 70% of their offense is via the home run. Maybe a little bit more, actually. So if they're not hitting bombs, they're not scoring. Bottom four, they're down 3-2. All right. They have first and second, nobody out. Joey Wendell's back up. He pops up the shortstop, pops up the Seager. All right. Got in on his, I believe it was a fastball, got in on him. You knew right away it was a meager pop up, no chance for a sack fly. Now it's first and third, one out, you down a run, middle frames. Adames is up, right? They showed the shift, if you recall.
Yeah.
Because.
Just go right, man. Just. Go inside out. Go right. Instead, he's swinging for the left field fence.
The first pitch, he rockets a bullet down a left field line, right?
Crushed it. He swung as hard as he could.
Which is what Kershaw's trying to make you do. Because he wants you to hit the ball into the shift. Obviously, not going to pitch it outside. I'm not saying it's easy. One of the hardest things, just put it the other way, advance the run. It's not easy when the guy who's 60 feet 6 inches away is putting a ball where you almost can't do that. I get it. But his approach was horrendous. And between it would have been Diaz holding him on first base, because Choi's not playing against a lefty. So Diaz holding him on between where Diaz was and the space between the first base bag and where the defender was positioned to the right side of second base was 110 feet of dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you push bunted, bunt.
I think Joe Buck said you could drive semi trucks through that hole.
You got to try. Horrendous approach by Adames. So now it's two out, first and third. You haven't scored a run, and then the ill-fated, which I was okay with, attempt of steal of home. To me, that was the game. That whole sequence in the fourth inning, the Adames at bat, you can hit a seven hopper through the hole, and it's first and third, and now it's a 3-3 game.
Yeah, so as versatile as the Tampa Bay Rays bullpen is and pitching staff, and as good as Kevin Cash is as a skipper and managing that bullpen, there's not enough versatility in their lineup, and there's not those guys that can play small ball, so to speak, you know. And so ultimately you have to fake it. Margot is good at doing it, and there's a couple other guys that might be good at doing it, but for the most part, these guys are swinging for the fence. They want to hit home runs. They think that's the difference making way to win a World Series, and it's not, because that's not how the Dodgers are going to do it.
No, it's been it has been an amazing World Series. It really has been. It's been an amazing. I said to start the show, taking away like my rooting interest, Yankees, obviously. The 86 World Series with the Red Sox and the Mets was insane. I'm sure the 75 World Series with Carlton Fish, Carlton Fish pushing it. You know, you've seen that iconic shot a ton. Mm-hmm. You know, there's obviously, you know, the Pirates, Mazeroski hits a walk-off in a left field, beat the Yankees. The Pirates never won. Yankees never lost. Dodgers win the World Series in 1955 after a million years of heartbreak. I mean, listen, there's a lot of great World Series, of course, but this one is the only thing that's missing is the juice of 55,000 people in the building.
Yeah.
And that's a shame, but the baseball has been special. The electricity has been palpable. That ball, when Muncy hit that ball, I mean, wow. That's 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
100.
Yeah, the Dodgers crushed a couple of them.
They did, and they do. You know, and then Saturday night you had Bellinger with a shoulder injury, with the issue with the shoulder. He can't play center field. Pavlik's got to play center field. If Bellinger's playing center field, I don't think you have that gaff, which means you probably don't have the game-winning runs, the run score the way it did. Saturday night. Now, if you want to isolate a game, if you want to say, well, this, you know, maybe you're overstating what this World Series is, that's fine. It's subjective, of course. What I interpret isn't necessarily what you interpret. But even on a subjective meter, Saturday night is very high on the list of crazy individual World Series games of all time. It was great. And do you think the Rays squeeze one off and push a game seven? Snell's going for him.
I do. I don't trust Gonsolin.
Exactly.
Again.
Yeah, for sure. Now, he got four outs last game, shortest ever in World Series history.
That's right.
I feel like there's going to be a game 7-2. I feel that way. But it wouldn't surprise me if the Dodgers put up an early crooked number and Snell's hitting the shower and they wound up pounding the Rays 9-3 or you know, 7-2. That wouldn't stun me, but boy, I would like to see a game 7. I really would. So baseball was just absolutely phenomenal this weekend. Teak, let's get an update. Axe got that for you. We'll come back. We'll hit you with inbounds, out of bounds, and we'll do it after Rich's update, which is right now. Here's Axe up. All right, inbounds, out of bounds coming up in a moment. Top of the hour, Baker's magic. Boy, he needed that. He was horrendous to start. But then Baker flipped the switch. Browns got it going. We'll get to that. But right now it's time for Doing More, brought to you by the Home Depot. With help from the Home Depot, you can take on full projects without ever leaving your own backyard. Download the Home Depot mobile app today to search, shop, and more. It's the Home Depot, how doers get more done. So on Friday, we touched on this a lot. Wisconsin freshman quarterback Graham Mertz led the Badgers to a 45-7 rout. They beat the Illini. He had one incomplete pass, 5 touchdowns, 20 out of 21, a Big Ten completion percentage record. And now we wait, you know, what happens with the nasal swab for the COVID, just to get a sense of what happens. But he could be on the show for 21 days. Hopefully not. But either way, he was great. All right, Tiki and Tierney back. CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Tiki, you ready for a little inbounds, out of bounds? You good to go?
I am. Let's do it.
Let's hit it.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right? What's wrong? And who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and out of bounds now. With Tiki and Tierney.
All right. Yesterday, Chargers rookie Justin Herbert earned his first career win after he threw for 347 yards, 3 scores against the Jaguars. He also carried the rock for 66 yards and another touchdown. Over his last 3 games, Herbert has been red hot. 10 touchdowns, just a single pick. And he lost a tight game in New Orleans, a tight one in Tampa. And he joins Patrick Mahomes as the only quarterbacks in history with 250 or more passing yards in each of his first 5 starts. Meanwhile, first overall pick Joe Burrow has 5 300-yard passing games, including 406 yesterday, with 12 overall touchdowns and 5 picks in or out. Justin Herbert has been the more impressive rookie quarterback than Joe Burrow.
It's hard to say this. I mean, if I could say both, I would, because they both have been impressive, mainly because Joe Burrow is under constant pressure because his offensive line is not doing an adequate job of protecting him. And so what he's been accomplishing has been, you know, pretty miraculous. But it just shows you how prepared he was for the NFL level. But I am going to say inbounds of this, BT, because I don't think – I knew that Joe Burrow, because of being 23 years old and, you know, playing big-time college football against Alabama's of the world and the national championship game, that he wasn't going to be intimidated by the stage, and he had made all these NFL-type throws in college. Justin Herbert wasn't necessarily asked to do all that stuff. So I'm going to say inbounds, because I didn't think that Justin Herbert was going to be a 350, 400-yard passer per game quarterback in the NFL. It wasn't what he was asked to do at Oregon. So this is impressive to me. And not turning the ball over as well, yeah, I'm going to say inbounds.
I'm going to say inbounds, too. This could be a little West Coast bias here. Not that, you know what I mean, where we just kind of gravitate to something a little closer to us. But I don't really think we're guilty of, in terms of assigning, you know, achievement.
No.
Maybe sometimes we might focus on the Yankees because we're Yankee fans and we live here.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, we certainly see the broad view here. And I think Herbert's been a little bit better. He's had as many splash plays. Actually, if you think about the amount of time he's played versus Burrow, he's played less. He's got just about the same amount of splash plays and far fewer mistakes. And you think about the way he was thrust into his first game when Tyrod Taylor had the reaction to the shot. He didn't even know he was going to play.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Tyrod Taylor in camp, we saw him on Hard Knocks. He was the starter.
That's right. It wasn't even a question.
No question. Joe Burrow began the camp as the starter. He's going to start. And he was fed the reps, and Herbert was not. So, you know, his ability to quickly accelerate the learning curve has been nothing short of miraculous and portends great things for him down the road. I know that Joe Burrow's a good athlete. Justin Herbert's a better athlete. And while I like both of them, I really do. Here's how I'm going to say it. While I do agree Herbert's been a little bit more impressive, I think they're in the perfect situation. Like, Herbert in Ohio and Burrow out west, not that it couldn't work, but I feel like they're on the right teams, and they'll both be really good.
Yeah, you're right.
You know?
Are you in or are you out?
Where is Herbert from? Where did he grow up?
He's in Oregon. He used to have season tickets. He used to sit up at the
That's right. Because his dad or grandfather, somebody used to take him. Yeah, that's right.
We had his coach on. We talked about that. I think that...
Mario Cristobal.
Mario we had on. We've got to get him on soon. I think that they're both really good, and they're going to be battling for good things in the AFC for a while. I like that. I like them both. Alabama rolled Tennessee, non-competitive, 48-17 on Saturday, despite starting quarterback Mac Jones not having a single touchdown pass. So he was number two in the Heisman thus far. He's got to drop a little bit, no touchdowns. That'll maybe take you back a little bit.
Trevor Lawrence had an okay day through his first pick six of the season.
they did not come close to covering that number.
No. But the number was ridiculous.
46.
Yeah, they won by 26 points, and people are upset, or whatever it was.
But it was tighter than 20. It was tight
for a while.
Of course. Now, without Mac Jones having a touchdown pass, one of the reasons could be that superstar wideout Jalen Waddle injured his leg on the opening kickoff, and Nick Saban delivered some devastating news at halftime with Jamie Ardell, our own Jamie on CBS. Here's Coach Saban.
He's out. He's out. He's out for the year. And it's a shame because the guy's a great player. It's exciting for college football to see a guy play like that. I hate it that he gets hurt on a play like that. Not supposed to bring a ball out when you're that deep in the end zone, but he's a great player. So, you got to let him use his judgment.
Well, that's ridiculous what he said at the end there.
I know.
That is ridiculous.
Come on, Saban.
You're not supposed to take the ball out of the end zone when it's that. Now, come on, Nick.
He should have stopped at his penultimate sentence. Come on, man.
He's hurting for the young man. I get it, but come on. A kid's trying to win a game, make a play. Stop. In or out, Alabama's title changes did take a major hit with the loss of Waddle.
Yes. I'm going to say out of bounds of this. They have so much talent. At the wide receiver position, obviously, John Mechie, the third, is there. Devontae Smith, who a lot of people think is the best wide receiver in college football, is still there. They have a sophomore, his name is Slade Bolton, who's just as good, not as fast as Waddle, but just as good as these other guys as well. And they have a trio of freshmen that are likely to step in and not miss a single beat. So I'm going to say out of bounds. I don't think their title chances have taken a blow at all.
I'm going to say absolutely out of bounds. Where's the evidence that forget about what they have on the roster in terms of the depth chart, which is incredibly impressive. Mm-hmm. That's one aspect of it. But where is the team that we could tangibly point to right now and say, that's the team that's going to beat them?
Yeah, especially in the SEC. It's not Florida. It's not Auburn. It's not LSU, clearly.
LSU, obviously.
I mean, they beat Georgia.
Yep.
Who is it?
If they play Ohio State in the championship game, possibly, sure.
Yeah. But once they're there, that's a different story.
I get it.
They just got to get to the Final Four, which it looks like it's a foregone conclusion. You never want to say that, but it looks like it's going to be that way, given how vulnerable the rest of the SEC seems right now.
Yeah, no, and even, listen, I know it's a little thing. Maybe they weren't that inspired. Maybe they're looking ahead to Notre Dame, but it's not like, even the way Clemson looked against Syracuse, and listen, I know the gap is incredibly wide in terms of talent between the two. Maybe a little disinterest set in, I hear you.
But Dino Babers' teams play hard.
They do. One thing about Dino Babers, he missed his window to jump.
Agreed. We said that two years ago, BT.
He beat Clemson a couple of years
ago. I know.
Remember that?
Remember we said that. We're like, dude, you should go now because you're not winning a national championship at Syracuse.
No, and they're bad. They were bad last year. Liberty crushed them this year by 30 at the Dome. They're a bad team. Bottom line is this. Alabama's still in really good shape. It's terrible for the young man, but Alabama still has a real shot to win, no question. Mm-hmm.
Are you in or are you out?
All right, so the Heat lost to the Lakers in the NBA Finals, and on Friday, team president Pat Riley got a little hot water, telling the Miami Herald. I read this on CBSSports.com. I don't really think we kicked it around on the show, but this bothered me. Quote, they beat us fair and squarely, so there's the little, all right, now I can say what I really want to say. But there's always going to be that asterisk. If we had Bam and Goran 100%, Dragic, obviously, it might have gone to a seventh game. That's a quote. Now, Riley clarified his comment saying, quote, the asterisk is next to the Heat's name, not the Lakers. Their title's legitimate. Our loss has the asterisk next to it. The Lakers were the better team, period. Well, then there should be no asterisks. Stop spinning the wheels, Pat.
I know.
Oh, God. Just say I misspoke, whatever. It came out wrong and move on. In or out, the Heat losing their top postseason scorer and top rebounder does cheapen the Lakers' victory.
Out of bounds. Does hurt having Steph Curry get hurt and Draymond Green, you know, getting 18 technical fouls and missing, you know, game against the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Golden State Warriors, and lost their one of the four in a row that they went to. No, they lost the game. It is what it is. Circumstances presented and not in their favor. You either overcome it and truly are a champion, or you don't. There's no nothing here. Lakers were better. They deserve the championship. No questions.
I was bothered by this. A little too petty for a guy who knows, you know, the arduous nature of championship pursuits. Mm-hmm. And we all misspeak. That's good. That's fine. But then to circle back and offer clarification that, to me, is still weak and wrong.
Yeah.
Maybe more importantly, I was a little disappointed in Pat there. I mean, listen. You had, over the years, you had, you know, Kareem mischant games with migraines. You know, Willis Reed came out and took two shots because his ankle was, his knee was a mess, and he hit them both, and the Knicks actually won. But we're littered with series that have been altered with history. It is what it is. So, no. And listen, just when he says we lost our leading scorer, you make it sound like you lost like a guy who...
Yeah.
He was the leading scorer in the postseason.
Yeah.
And Dragic was really good in the postseason.
True.
But
not like he was scoring 40 points a game and you were dependent upon winning.
I didn't like it. That bothered me.
Are you in or are you out?
All right. Knock, knock. Who is it? Uh-oh. It's the NCAA knocking on the home of Sean Miller. Arizona Wildcats. Notice of allegations. But it's about time this happened, right? I mean, Sean Miller's been skating on thin ice for a long time, seemingly. This goes back to a 2017 FBI probe. Now, Arizona was hit with 9 total violations, including 5 level ones and a charge of lack of institutional control and a charge of lack of head coach control from Miller, so the school and the coach. Now, we all remember this address to the fans in their final home game. Was that 2 years? I think that was 2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 seasons ago.
That sounded like a goodbye. Here's Miller.
There's no place that's more magical There's no place that's more magical than McHale Center. There's no fans in the world that are more loyal, and it has been an amazing honor to coach in McHale Center for the last 10 years. Thank you for everything.
Okay. Sure sounded like a goodbye. Mm-hmm. Inbounds, out of bounds here, Teak. Arizona must move on from Miller after these allegations from the NCAA.
Yeah, this is easily inbounds. It's been a few years coming. It's definitely time for them to move on from him. He said his goodbye already, so you don't even have to start the season.
Inbounds. He's got to go. He's got to go. And I'm fine with cutting corners and even, you know, I hate to say I'm fine with cheating, but I'm also realistic that all the heavyweights do cheat. It is what it is. I've been saying that for as long as I've had a microphone in front of my face. But there's levels of cheating that are utterly reprehensible and unacceptable. And 5 level ones, 9 overall sanctions. You got to send it out the door. He's got to go. He can't coach his program anymore. Get to Baker Mayfield next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.